Human design is a part science, part spiritual system that tells you who you came here to be. You have your own blueprint, your own way of becoming successful, your own way your dreams are going to come true, the way you'll experience the most joy and fulfillment. The instruction manual for how to move through the world is custom to you. When you act according to that manual, when you act as the real you, everything in life comes to you with more ease and less resistance. We all know we're different, yet we're still acting like there's one way to do life. Let's talk about it. To find out your design and the designs of the people in your life, you can visit myhumandesign.com or download the My Human Design app in the App Store and on Google Play.
Okay, so mystical episode. We spoke about doing this last time, yeah. And I think you are so right that people really believe in this world, but also this world hasn't been explained to us, I feel, well enough that it's not that easy to trust it because you don't know what's what and you have so many different stories. And I love what Kabbalah says about all these different things. So I'm just going to throw some topics at you. Please. And you throw it down.
Let's do it.
The first one, and I'm bringing this one up first because it changed my life so deeply when I heard the Kabbalistic explanation of angels and how angels aren't these, this microphone that I'm speaking into has its own angel.
Sure.
So riff on that.
So it's interesting because there's so many ways of approaching it. But first, I would say sages explain that there are four main energy levels. And one would be like the human body. And that's where, if you've taken Kabbalah 1, you kind of know. We all have this negativity, this baggage that we come with, which is like our tikkun. And the body is influenced so much by this tikkun, by our fears and our negativity. And so we're controlled by that. Then above this spiritual realm, above this realm is a spiritual realm called the world of angels. And then above that is where our soul's domain is. And above that, we could say that's where kind of the light of the creator is. So these four levels. And the idea is that when a person does their spiritual work and overcomes the body consciousness and they tap into their soul, they're now in control of this world of angels. So what does that mean? It means that all of the non-spiritual forces in this world that are, like it says, there's an angel that tells that blade of grass to grow. The Zohar talks about that. There's an angel that is in charge of each cell of our body has an angel. Every word we say creates an angel. Every follicle of hair has an angel. So all of these forces are being controlled by the realms above. So by the soul, which is then being controlled by the light of the creator. So literally when a person breaks their fears, has certainty, overcomes all the body consciousness, all the stuff we're trying to change, you start to control this entire world. You control all the angels, you control all the subatomic forces, you control all the molecules and the atoms, so on and so forth. And the analogy I make is, one time I asked, when I started to learn how to teach, this was 20 years ago, I asked my mentor, who heard from Rav Berg, was the great Kabbalist of our time, said, what is the best advice you can give me for public speaking and teaching? So he said, before you go in, take the time to reflect on your own negativity and transformation and make a commitment to change yourself. And so the question is, why do I need to focus on changing myself, 10 minutes before I go give a talk? And he said that the transformation of your own negativity, or at least the conscious desire to change, elevates you from the body consciousness to the level of the souls, so that when you go and speak, all the angels are being directed by you to affect your crowd. As opposed to when you go in without having done your spiritual work or your transformation, or maybe you had a really reactive day and you're still in that sadness or that anger or that hurt. And then you go to do something important, you're below the world of the angels. So you're not in control of this world anymore. You cannot direct that energy. So if you have something very important going on in your life, right before an important meeting, an important decision, an important something, do as much spiritual work, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, an hour before, because that will help you rise above and connect to your soul and the light of the creator. So then that meeting or that event or that business endeavor will work out better because you're directing the angels there. Mm-hmm. And the definition of an angel is simply just a bottle of energy. It's a force of energy that has one mission and it cannot divert from that mission. So it has one task and it must do that task. Angels don't have free will to choose the way humans do. And it's really powerful because we came into this world actually without much free will. You know, before a person studies spirituality, they're very reactive. We just do whatever we feel. We do whatever our preconditioned negativity tells us to do. We do whatever we were raised by our parents or our past lives or souls that come. So actually, most people you see, they think they're choosing. They're not choosing much. They're just reacting. You start to study Kabbalah or most spiritual paths, and then you realize, wait a minute, I have a choice. I don't have to just react to this. I can overcome my nature. So now you're in the world of free will. Mm. What's the ultimate goal? To get to a place where you've transformed so much of yourself that the light of the Creator shines on you and you become like an angel, which doesn't have free will again. But the difference is you now don't have free will in terms of everything positive. So you wake up in the morning. It says that King David used to wake up in the morning, and even though he wanted to do one thing, his feet were guided by the light of the Creator, and he moved to do something else. We want to get to this place where even if we wanted to say something negative, our mouths would just not open. You would feel this very strong feeling that you shouldn't, that your free will would be taken away, and only you would be channeled to do positive things, exactly what your soul needs to do. The final analogy I'll make is this world is like a Waze application, like a Waze navigation system, in that there are no wrong decisions that people make. People are always wondering, what's the right decision? What's the wrong decision? If you put a destination into Waze, Waze will tell you, here's the most direct path to get there. Let's say you decide you're smarter than Waze and you'll take a different side street, or you'll get off at the next exit of the freeway, or maybe you just make a mistake and you make a wrong turn. Waze doesn't judge you. Waze doesn't punish you. Waze doesn't all of a sudden shut down, turn off, or say you're a bad person. Waze simply says, we're going to recalculate the best route for you. And that's how the Creator is. This is how the angels work. Every time you make a mistake, you could make the worst mistake in your life, and people live with so much guilt and shame, and they don't need to. The universe just recalculates the next best possible path for you to get to where you're going. So every time you beat yourself up for something you did wrong, all you're causing is more negativity that's causing ways to recalculate, causing the Creator to recalculate. It's just better to let go of the guilt, shame, and fear and say, I made a mistake. I'm really happy I made the mistake because now I can learn. I'm going to learn my lesson. I'm going to move forward with joy. Then you're right back to the most direct path to where you need to be. And I think that's a really important thing. And it's funny, I don't know why I'm sharing this example now. It just came to me, but it's obviously because somebody or some many people might need to hear it. I need to hear it. Mm-hmm. That you do not have to constantly be hard on yourself. Mm. I think this is something that a lot of people struggle with.
Yeah. It's huge because I think a lot of the times we've been taught that the guilt and shame is the good person's response to that mistake, that's quote unquote. Right. But actually, you know, in the Kabbalistic teaching, that is your ego, your inner opponent, correct, telling you that you should be wasting your energy doing those things,
correct,
rather than actually seeing things from a larger perspective of the Creator still loves me. The Creator wants me to win. Okay, let's just, we took a off turn. Now let's just calculate the next best turn from where we are. And I think that's so freeing to really remember that the guilt and shame is giving in to, that's the bad part.
Correct.
But I love what you're saying because essentially you're bringing me onto the next thing I was going to ask you about, which is, you know, your what you came to do in this lifetime, which in Kabbalah, they call that your tikkun.
Yeah.
And what you're saying about, I'll let you explain it, but what you're saying about how, you know, your feet kind of take over, it's that, it's the sort of, how do I put this? Like you've gotten your own mind out of the way.
Yeah.
And so then it's easier to feel directed by the force of the Creator that you can't actually, you couldn't even try to interfere with the unfolding of your path, your destiny, your perfection if you tried.
Correct. So there's, when your soul comes down to this world, there's two aspects to what your soul's purpose is and your soul's mission. So the first aspect is, let's say 50% of what the work you need to do is to identify layers and layers of negativity that the soul came to the world with and slowly transform them through different technology and spirituality. And we won't get into that now, but that is our first purpose. And so the main way we can identify what we need to change is that our soul chooses the types of people that will come into their lives. Even the parents that you are born into, the soul chooses the best parents. So parents that get divorced or parents that are neglectful or parents that are loving, you'll always pick whatever parents will awaken the negativity that's already inside of you. It's not that your parents are causing you a fear of abandonment, but it's that you came with a fear of abandonment from a past life, so you chose parents who would be divorced or leave you. This then allows your negativity to come to the surface at the forefront so that you can do spiritual work to transform it. So that's the first part of negativity. And actually, your soul is drawn all the way throughout your lives, through high school, through college. You know, it wasn't random that you met all these people. Your soul honed in on all of these other souls who would be perfect, a perfect match for you to see the good and bad qualities, to strengthen the good and to transform the negative qualities. That's 50% of our mission. The other 50% is that we all have qualities. Some are hidden, some are awakened already in terms of ways that we need to bring light and energy to the world. So you can imagine a singer who has a phenomenal voice, who has a huge audience, and she brings so much joy and love, and she changes the world with her music. It is her duty and responsibility to follow that path, and there will be a lot of obstacles in his or her way, but she must bring that joy to the world. Like what you're doing with your wisdom, it is part of your spiritual path. And even when it gets very difficult, we don't know what that number of souls is that you need to touch, but you need to ask the Creator on a daily basis, like, what is that? And I'm here to do it. And you need to push through to do it. And there'll be a lot of challenges in your way. That's 50%. But a lot of singers in the world, they are dedicated to their craft and they will share with the world, but maybe they're not going to do that original 50% I said, which is work on themselves. So they'll get off the stage at a concert and have a horrible attitude with their staff, with other people, or they'll be invested in different addiction and drugs and escapism. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of people who will just do one part of their correction, but there are very few people, and the negative side makes sure of this, that do both. Mm. But that is the true way of becoming connected to the world of the light of the Creator, the realm of the light of the Creator.
And the first 50% can be really subtle, because I think it's easier for us to see people who are nasty or whatever, but including low self-worth, including not believing in yourself, including in fear of rejection, fear of abandonment, those things are not real in terms of they're not what the Creator is. And so we still need to clean ourselves of it. And I think that's so important to point out that, you know, that's not a less bad thing to want to get rid of. You know, the low self-belief than the almost false high self-belief.
Yeah. So in fact, there's four levels of tikkun, and it's also connected to the four elements, which is fire, air, water, and earth. And so the more earth-based corrections, such as sadness, guilt, shame, laziness, these are actually more negative than the fire based on the higher scale, such as pride, control, judgment. The lower ones are actually more dangerous than the higher ones. So a person with low self-esteem creates more negativity than a person who has so much self-esteem and ego and arrogance. The reason is because someone with low self-esteem, they are literally a black hole, because they're not generating energy and creating value for society. Someone who has a lot of ego, at least there's a generation of value. They are just making it all about them, and that's obnoxious, and it is a turnoff, and it disconnects their soul in many ways. But the fact that they're creating value and they're bringing some level of positivity to the world helps generate miracles in their lives. And this is why we see people with high self-esteem, even if they have a lot of ego, they have a lot of success, and they do have miracles in their lives, mm-hmm. because they are generating value for society. They're doing 50% of what they came to this world to do. Someone with low self-esteem, the problem is they have their negativity they may or may not be dealing with, and they don't feel the motivation and energy to go out there and create for the world. Mm. So, and here's the other thing. People who have a lot of ego also have a lot of people around them and tell them they have ego. So they have a feedback loop that is very instantaneous. And so they transform faster. Because eventually society is going to hand you your tikkun and say, hey, you need to change this. You're being obnoxious. People who are like fake humble or hiding or don't believe in themselves often aren't in the face of people. To get that feedback. They're left alone. And so those people can actually stay in their state for much longer. It's much more dangerous that way.
And it explains there's such a perfection in the design of it all because, you know, just going a little bit deeper into tikkun, it's very dictated. Tikkun is translated as your correction. That you have to do in this life. And it is very dictated by the lives that you've had in the past. Things that you have either... not corrected before or things that you've kind of ways that you've behaved that you now need to come and kind of balance out or correct.
And sometimes souls can come and bring upon the tikkun of their soulmate or other souls. So this is also something that's very prevalent. Not only that, but sometimes when we're born, there are, you know, in the world of spirits, there's something called ibur and dibuk. So ibur is a positive soul that will attach to your soul in this lifetime and actually give you strength and consciousness to be able to do your mission in this world. So there's many different ways to attract these iburs, these positive souls that will attach to you. So for example, one of the things is that when you go on like a spiritual retreat, very common if we go to Israel, for example, and there's the sites of great souls that have lived before. Like let's say you go to the grave site of Abraham. From the Bible. Abraham was a soul who was known for, his greatest trait was hospitality and sharing. He was the pillar of the energy of mercy and sharing for the world. It says that if you go to where he is and you connect to his soul and maybe study from some of his wisdom, you can draw a piece of his soul that will attach to yours, and this is called ibur, and it will stay with you. It will stay with you for as long as you need, or until you get, it says when you get very angry, your soul actually leaves your body, a piece of your soul leaves your body, and all the positive souls that you attracted also end up leaving. So anger is actually one of the worst forms of reactive behavior, anger and sadness. These two types of negativity cause all the positive souls that you've accumulated in your life to leave. Another way of getting a positive soul is eating food. Food have sparks of light and souls in them. And so one of the reasons why we eat food is actually to elevate the souls from the lower kingdoms up. And the elevation of these souls is what creates a lot of energy and consciousness for us. Sometimes if you eat without consciousness or you eat too quickly or you eat just because you're so hungry, you cause these souls to be trapped in many ways. And there's a negative reaction that happens to people. And sometimes there are negative souls in food and you'll eat something and then you won't feel right or you'll feel worse or you'll feel more angry. So there's a lot going on. The main protection is around food. Every time you're looking at food, let's say I'm drinking this water, I'm meditating not just to quench my thirst, but I'm meditating to elevate whatever sparks of light or souls that are in water so that they can reincarnate in the right way and I'm helping facilitate creation forward. So it's all consciousness. If we just connect to the physical side of stuff, even sitting in this chair, I'm not just sitting in the chair because I'm comfortable, but there's energy, there's sparks, there's souls, perhaps even in the vegetable kingdom that is called this chair, in the wood. By me allowing the chair to serve me, and I'm conscious of this, I'm elevating the energy of the chair, and I'm advancing creation even more. But it's all consciousness. If we just take from the world, we're not elevating the world. So the world cannot help us. Nature cannot help us. Food cannot help us. It all kind of goes to the reactive system instead of the proactive system. So all in all, there are these positive souls that we can draw and attract. And another way is just by spending time with good people. Every person you spend time with, every person you work with, every person you're intimate with. I made a couple of posts about this. If it's through intercourse or even kissing, you draw a piece of their soul into you. So you draw both their negative and positive qualities as well. And so this is something to be very, very conscious of and aware of. And then on the flip side, I'll talk about dibuk, which is these negative spirits and souls. And so when a person is very reactive or sad or angry, you become very vulnerable to these lost souls that roam the earth, and they're looking for a host to attach to. And some they exist a lot in, for example, cemeteries. It says that when you're in a cemetery, you shouldn't go alone. You should go with at least another person, because the unity of two people creates protection. Another thing could be going to cemeteries at night. It's not good because there's a lot of souls there. Obviously, they're there. And they look for hosts to attach themselves to, because they're looking for a way for them to do a tikkun, and they need a body to do it.
Right.
So they'll attach. Mm. This is not to be scary, but this is just to kind of be conscious of a lot of the feelings that we have. All of a sudden, we don't know why we feel upset, hurt, or afraid. Mm. It's because we're opening ourselves up to maybe some of these negative forces coming in.
And there's always ways that you can. It's
by the way, your audience likes this kind of stuff.
Love.
We're not going to.
No. We can make it.
We were very practical in the last podcast. Just we could stick to relationships and certainty if you are.
Honestly, I love and we love, I can speak on their behalf, the coming together of the two, because I think that really is the only way we can get there, is like you have to marry the two.
100%.
Like you can't do one without the other.
Here's the thing. When we go into the mystical stuff, it's actually very scientific. I had a guy come to my seminar in Brazil recently, and he's like, I don't want to be here. I'm a doctor. I'm very left-brained. Everything's logical. He's like, but this was the most logical seminar I've ever heard. It was all about this kind of concept. Mm-hmm. But Kabbalah just breaks it down into a structure that doesn't make it so like out of this world. It's actually very practical.
Make sense of it. And also, you know, when people say like, oh, I just think this stuff is so magical, a lot of the time you can feel like that just like flippant kind of thing. Like, oh, it's magic. But actually magic is just, there will be a scientific explanation for.
Correct.
Is it that crazy that you can measure an energy at night and you can measure it coming into your own energy field if you can measure your frequency, which is just a matter of time. Like,
correct.
That will happen. So
300 years ago, if you had an iPhone, it'd be considered witchcraft. They would burn you.
Yeah.
So today it's commonplace, right? But if a laptop, they would think you were crazy.
I mean, honestly, I think about that every time I get on a plane. I'm like, that this would break people's understanding of reality if you did this 100 years ago. Like, it would actually make them insane because they wouldn't be able to understand it.
Correct.
So just our understanding of it makes it okay. And that's why these kind of tools that make it practical are so helpful.
There will eventually be devices. For example, if a person, one of the most dangerous forms of creating negative forces and entities is through evil speech. I talk about this so much because suffice it to say that 90% of all the chaos, so anyone who's listening, 90% of all the chaos you're going through in your life, financial issues, marital issues, issues with your kids, issues with your diet, issues with your body, is not coming from food or people or you know, circumstance or the economy. Mm-hmm. It's coming from negative speech. So if you think of, I don't know how many words on average we speak a day, but let's say it's like 40 or 50,000. Let's say it's 50,000 words. Negative speech is defined as any kind of speech which does not help someone or many people elevate towards the light of the Creator in some way. So definitely if I assassinate someone's character, definitely if I'm putting somebody down, definitely if I'm complaining, that's negative speech. Negative speech is even if I say something and the other person says, so what? Like, it means nothing to them. And I literally wasted my words. That's considered negative speech. So for example, if I tell you, Jen, I had this dream last night and it was a dream and I talk about my dream and you're like, so what? Like, that absolutely added no value to my life that you just shared with me a dream you had that was so random. This would be considered negative speech as well.
Wow.
Any word that comes out of our mouths should be to build and never to destroy. And so we have to be very conscious and to only say that which we feel adds value or helps in some way build. Mm-hmm. And so all of these negative forces that are created from our words are actually what are causing so much of the different forms of chaos in our lives. And I forgot why I got into this. Why did I?
Because
what was the thing we were talking about?
I don't remember, but I was going to say you're bringing it back to the very beginning because what you're saying is bring...
Oh, now I remember.
Go on.
Now I remember. Okay, it came back to me. Because one day we're going to have devices that are going to measure the actual positive or negative words that come out of our mouths. And then you will be able to see it in the same way you can measure the steps you have, or measure your heart rate, or measure the hours you slept, or if you, what kind of sleep you had, maybe with an Oura ring. There'll be a device for the mouth that will say, out of the 50,000 words you spoke, you know, 45,000 of them created negative forces. Mm. And 5,000 of them energetically built, because we will be able to measure the atoms and the electromagnetic field that was changed by our words. Because we know that prayer changes energy fields. We know that if I bless this water, I can change the molecular structure of the water. That's been proven. Mm-hmm. So eventually, there'll be a measuring device of evil speech, which if a person could actually see the forces that they're creating by speaking negatively, everybody would put tape on their mouth. Everybody would immediately enter a realm of silence and be very careful about what they say.
So we may as well act as if there already is one.
Correct.
And all that does is bring awareness, consciousness, makes us conscious of what we're doing rather than living on automatic pilot, which kind of comes back to the whole thing about the free will, what you were saying earlier about we would not be able to help if we get so good at it, right? Yeah. We wouldn't even be able to not help saying something, only positive things.
Correct.
Because we flexed it so many times.
Beautiful, beautiful. We are all, most evil speech comes from unresolved traumas, fears, and insecurities, because we're trying to find a way to bring energy to heal those wounds. And the easiest way is to speak negatively or to complain, because it draws short-term light, but then you lose that light to the negative side and you create more negative forces in this world.
And then it's a quick hit and then you feel even more empty
then,
later.
Then you feel you need to do it.
So then going back to the cocoon.
Yeah.
If you have certain things that keep reoccurring in your life, and again, not because of any random coincidence, but because you keep attracting this energy of something that's going to awaken your abandonment or your rejection or whatever, and you understand that it's coming because the universe is basically showing you what you need to work on. It's making it very easy, clear as day, for you to know your tikkun.
Yeah.
What do you think are, like, what are some practical steps for people to get to know, like, okay, well, what is my tikkun? What is my correction?
Yeah. First off, whatever is bothering you, it means it's an area of tikkun. Whatever flows through you and it does not bother you, it means it has nothing to do with your tikkun. So the first thing to ask yourself, well, tikkun has two parts. There's trigger tikkun and mirror tikkun. A mirror tikkun is when you're looking at someone and they're upsetting you. It can be a person you know, person you're close to. It could be a person on TV. It could be a public figure. It could be a political figure. And you're watching them on TV. You're like, this person, I hate this person. Well, the reason why you hate them is because they're mirroring something about you. And this is where the visceral reaction comes from. Mm. So for example, maybe this person is corrupt and they're taking all the money and politically they're abusing their power. So it upsets you. Well, I'm not corrupt, so why am I upset? Mm. But you could be abusing your power as a parent. You could be abusing your power in the relationship. Maybe you're too controlling with your spouse or too controlling with your friends. That's an abuse of power in many ways, right? It could be that in your job, you're not paying attention to your employees and you're not listening to them. You're just forcing them to be a certain way. You don't have sensitivity for them. So what's really the difference? You're abusing your power because you're not nurturing and taking care of the people under you. You're not sensitive to what they need. You're not helping them grow and elevate them. This would be why it's painful for you to watch a corrupt politician on TV. A trigger tikkun could be, for example, if I'm driving and I'm a type A personality and I'm trying to get to my place quickly, there's someone very slow in front of me and they're slowing me down and I'm getting really upset and angry with them. What's happening is this person is slow and I'm fast. So what they're doing is they're triggering within me my tikkun, which is I need to let go. I need to learn that life isn't just about having the entitlement of I need to get to wherever I need to get to, but to trust that if I'm getting there slower, that's what the light of the Creator wants. Mm. And so many times, very quick people, people who are very controlling, will be blessed by slow people, people who are trying to break that control. Often, if you have a lot of control issues, or you're always escaping towards work as a way to self-soothe, a lot of times you'll have ankle injuries or some kind of something that causes you to have to like lay down, mm-hmm. not move. And you're forced to literally slow down. Mm. So it starts with the guy driving slow and it ends with a sprained ankle right. that literally forces you to go slow.
Yeah.
And then often you see when people are sick, that's when they have the spiritual awakenings. They're like, they realize, what am I doing? Mm-hmm. Burning the candle at both ends, traveling all the time. I'm not seeing my family. I'm not taking care of myself. I'm overweight. I'm obese. I have high blood pressure. I'm not happy. Mm-hmm. And they only realize it when they're finally laying down.
Yeah.
So this is another way that the world interacts with our tikkun.
Yeah. And it will use any of the colors, sensations, situations, body, whatever. Right. And
there's four levels. I'll say this. There's four levels to pain. So each person can see where they are. When the universe wants you to know, when the universe wants you to change something, it sends you four signals. First is very subtle. It can be you hear a podcast, you hear something, you're like, oh, well, that's me. I need to change that. That's the first, that's actually the Creator telling you, hey, I'm letting you know now, this must be changed. If you listen, if you don't change, then it goes into another level. It could be like a parking ticket. If you don't listen to that, then it could be like a car accident. And then if you don't listen to that, then it goes into the body. Mm-hmm. If you don't listen to the body, then it goes to death. And this is why death is actually very important for us, because what death does is any area where we decided we're not going to change or we're very stubborn about changing, death can cleanse. And so the soul leaves and it goes through a purification process after the leaving. That purification process can take up to 12 months. It can take 1 second or 12 months before the soul reincarnates again. But what happens during that purification process is all the aspects that were very stubborn, that we did not listen through the four signs, it gets cleansed through the process of death and then the soul comes back. Because otherwise, what hope would there be for the soul to change once we've made a decision, very stubborn decision, that we're not going to change? And this is also why death is so important. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you
really
off.
That's really beautiful.
I just wanted to share that.
I like that death is a... Well, as you're speaking, I was like, that's a very gracious process because it gives us the slow, you know, the opportunities to have the transformation in the most merciful way.
Correct.
But when we're not listening, it needs to give us a bit more of a prod and it just is that simple.
Correct. If the whole purpose is for the soul to reach its perfection, then death is a beautiful part of that process and a very helpful part of that process. Mm. It's very painful for us in this physical world, and we all trying to avoid death and try to live long. And when people die, we get really afraid and insecure about it. But we got to look at the bigger picture. The bigger picture is the soul needs death in order to experience life. And yes, we should try to avoid death spiritually by doing our spiritual work, but we cannot often, or we maybe don't have the strength to do it in this lifetime. So death assists in that process.
Mm. And I mean, let's talk about past life regressions if you have anything to say on that, because my experience is that they do help make sense of, that is what you're saying, is the bigger picture. When you know what you did wrong or did well or didn't do or whatever in past lives, it really does help you get the bigger picture. And I was, you know, I came into spirituality so skeptical. I was not a believer in any of this, but what my experience was is that I did some past life regressions with some of your
colleagues.
So yes. I
need to do, I've heard great things about it. I need to do with, I know who you're talking about.
Anyways, she saw what I saw without me telling her what I'd seen. So we were in it together.
Is this Ruth or you?
Uh-huh. Okay. So I did a couple of three with Ruth, one at the end of, I think it was Kabbalah 3 with Marcus. Anyway, but it's just context. And it really proved to me that these things are real. You know what I mean? It's not just a part of your imagination. And I think for something I've really experienced was that recurring yes. nightmares all connected to yes. past life often.
Yes.
And they help you direct stuff. So these things are not, they're all clues. It's all here for us to get to know what
I know you agree with this. Astrology, human design, past life regressions, dream interpretation, all of these are help piecing together clues to help us with that tikkun process. And first time I came to study Kabbalah, I was 15 years old. And a lot of people don't know this, but I was an avid trader in the stock market. I was immersed in stock market, almost to the point we call it gambling. I was playing poker 7 to 8 hours a day. I was addicted to poker. I just was a gambler. And it actually worried my parents when I came to study Kabbalah. They were actually hoping the Kabbalah would help. Long story short, I did a chart reading, an astrological chart reading, which Kabbalistically kind of shows like where your soul came from, what your tikkuns could be, and what you can do to transform. I sat down. This woman never met me before, knows nothing about me, says, all right, I see through your chart. And part of this is the intuition of the person, which the creator is giving wisdom to help you, but also what they see in the chart. Mm-hmm. She said, you know, you're a past life gambler. And one of the first thing she says, you're a past life gambler. And one of the things I'm seeing here is you lost everything in your past life because of gambling. You lost your spouse, you lost your kids, you lost you built a lot of wealth and you lost it. And what I'm seeing here is in this life, you have to be careful not to even engage in, not to walk into a casino. Like after I heard that, because as a child, I was obsessed with cards and obsessed with numbers and obsessed with money. And so why would a child, like literally 13, 14, 15 years old, I'm mastering poker. This was all stuff my soul carried from a past life that I needed to deal with. And then ever since then, I stopped. I probably only now was like maybe 20, 25 years later, I started to maybe casually play poker with friends and whatnot. But and I get no pleasure from it. And there's no really like what I felt before. So I would tell everyone, the more you can learn about it for the sake of transformation, and when you go to someone trustworthy, you should ask the creator to speak through them so that it bypasses their ego and their logic so that the right information can truly come down from the creator through that person. Like, I hope it's okay to say it. I was lucky enough for you to do my human design right before we did this. And I know you don't do that for anybody really. And so I kind of squeezed that out of you right before our podcast session. And the truth was, I said to the creator, I said, you know, please channel through her what I need to hear, what I need to feel, because then it's unlimited as it comes down through. And about people who are listening to your content and on your app, they should say that prayer even before they open your app, because through the app, energetically, things will change, which is so powerful.
Absolutely. And from your side too, you know, you always say, you know, help me get out of my own way with everything I say. Let it be of the highest, you know, service to other people. It's not coming from my thought. Like, please let it not come from my thoughts, because that's,
so
you know,
limited.
A disaster.
So limited.
But I also wanted to, you know, say that it's so interesting because what you're saying about the 50-50, you know, we're so focused on the second 50, which is achieving our greatness and, you know, doing big things.
Most people are.
Whatever. But actually, the perfection process of your own soul on a greater scale can, once you start to get into this, it becomes so much more of a, you see it in such a bigger way and it's so much more important that it almost, I want to say not that it's no work, but it almost becomes a no-brainer that gambling, for example, would even be an option. Because you're like, oh my God, if I could perfect my soul just by not gambling, like, duh.
And not only that, but if you work on your negativity and your fears and your tikkun, it's going to create the pathway for wealth and your purpose to find an even more direct path. Because if you're a singer and you'll be a very successful singer and get to where you need to get to faster, work on your fears, work on your trauma, work on your negative, work on your doubts. Anything you do with certainty will move faster and smoother. And anything you do with doubts, fear, and anxiety will slow down and take a circuitous route.
That it's, we're just circling. We have so many open tabs, but we're kind of circling all around the same themes. And I just want to, you know, really validate that, you know, the best way to get to the thing that all of our souls want, which is self-actualization and to become our real expression of our the divine through us, is to give yourself the full licensing to do the mystical and the practical and the physical on all levels. And actually, you shouldn't have to, don't let the ego say you have to choose or you have to whatever. Like, we have to fire on all cylinders because 100%. We just have this one shot at it. So yes. I'm really glad we could talk about this too, because I think there's such a nice, like you're saying, like it's such validation to also explore these other mystical things, which are just here to help us. So
I love that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.